We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a wonderful show for you. This week is the Yom Kippur show. Yom Kippur is Wednesday night, Thursday, and that's coming up. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. In the first half of the show, we'll be featuring a rebroadcast of an interview with Dr. Benjamin Epstein. Living in the Presence was a book that he wrote about Jewishness and mindfulness, which is always a good thing around Yom Kippur. Be mindful of what it is that you've done till now and what you're going to do from now. We've got Yom Kippur music sprinkled throughout the show and an awesome Hasidic story at the end. Very timely, as I might say. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Six terrorists escaped a maximum security prison in Israel. Four of them are serving life sentences. Police are actively trying to recapture them. The Palestinian Authority is helping with the search. In the meantime, riots have broken out in prisons around Israel, and Hamas has promised another intifada if any harm happens to them. In other news, the population of Israel is 9.3 million people. Approximately 6.9 million, or 74%, are Jewish. There's about 15.1 million people, Jews, living in the worldwide. Let's try that a little bit again. We're going to redo that one because my gut is okay. The population of Israel is 9.3 million. Approximately 6.9 million, or 74%, are Jewish. 15 million Jews live worldwide. Israel will be allowing tour groups to enter for the Sukkot holiday. You got to sign up. You got to be in tour group. Birthright, which is that organization that gives free trips to Israel for young people, has resumed its trips to Israel. All tourists must be fully vaccinated and have had a COVID test. The 7-day quarantine is also waived. Slovakia issued an apology on the 80th anniversary of passing laws that stripped Jews of their rights. Slovakia sent 70,000 people of its 83,000 Jews to Nazi concentration camps. The current Jewish population in Slovakia is about 4,000 people. More than 100 headstones were smashed at a Jewish cemetery in Argentina. And this is really interesting. In a very rare procedure, Siamese twin girls joined at the back of the head were successfully separated at Soroka Hospital in Be'er Sheva. Both girls are doing well and are in stable condition. We will now hear Rosh Hashanah greetings from Israel's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and one of my favorites, England's Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
To all our Jewish friends, relatives and neighbours around the world who are marking Rosh Hashanah this week. And I'm very sure it's going to be a very happy new year. Because after 18 months in which we've seen Passover Seders forced online, the high holy days disrupted, and countless bar and bat mitzvah parties cancelled, I'm delighted that here in the UK, you'll be able to welcome 5,782 with all the celebration and ceremony one would normally expect. But we do all still have to be careful, so it's very much shofar, show good. The synagogue doors are open. You can hear those blasts of the shofar in person rather than via some app. And you can finally get together with your nearest and dearest to reflect on the year just gone by and think about what kind of life you're going to live in the 12 months to come. The past year has been difficult for us all, and everyone has certainly earned the right to celebrate the arrival of a new one. So, on behalf of the whole country, let me wish the Jewish people everywhere a good and sweet new year. Shana Tova.
Shalom from Jerusalem. I'd like to wish the Jewish people around the world a Shana Tova and Happy New Year. This last year has had its fair share of challenges for all of us. But what's really special about our nation, the Jewish nation, is that we never give up hope. We stay strong, we stay together, united, and we persevere in the face of challenges. You know, when faced with the challenge of an invisible enemy, COVID, Jewish communities around the world came together to help one another, showing a great sense of arvut hadadit, mutual responsibility, and proving that we're strongest when we're united. Israel became the first country in the world to pioneer the third dose of the vaccine shot, with over 2 million Israelis who've already received their third shot. It's safe, it's working, and we're sharing all of the insights and information with the rest of the world, because that's what we're about, of pioneering and being a light upon the nations. So when we face the challenge of hatred for our mere being, be it in the form of anti-Semitism or the attempts by Iran and its proxies to destroy Israel, it's our resilience and defiance that make us even stronger. Today, we must live proudly without fear. Jews cannot be afraid. Our people are not united only by a common past, but by a shared purpose, a destiny of doing good, of being a force for good in this troubled world. But for that, we have to be strong. Be strong and do good. That's what we're about. We're an ancient people that's overcome the odds to achieve the impossible miracle called the State of Israel. We're a nation that's filled with hope, that we don't give up easily, and we celebrate life. So here's to a year of new beginnings and new achievements. May we all be inscribed in the Book of Life, Sefer HaChaim, Shana Tova to all of you.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Schulterman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Benjamin Epstein. Dr. Benjamin Epstein is a psychologist. Recently wrote a book, Living in the Presence, A Jewish Mindfulness Guide for Everyday Life. How are you today, Dr. Benjamin?
I'm doing very well. I'm so glad to be here, and thank you so much for the coordination. I'm really excited. Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure. Okay, so let's back up all the way to the beginning, okay?
Sure.
A lot of our listening audience is not familiar with the ins and outs of Judaism, and when you think meditation, so people think Hindu, Buddhist, Eastern, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. One of the last things that they think of, the word that comes to mind, you say this and I'll say this. If you say meditation, one of the last things that they're going to say is Jewish. So what does it say in the books about Jewish meditation?
I think that I would have had that same response a few years ago as well. Growing up in yeshiva, modern Orthodox education, meditation was not something that was mentioned. It was definitely not as in vogue as it is today in the zeitgeist in general, but certainly within a Jewish framework, there really wasn't a lot of talk about it. And then I was exposed to the teachings of Rav Aryeh Kaplan Zatzal, who is probably the most prolific writer and probably the most adept individual to write about this subject, where he really opened my eyes and to anyone who's read his writings, where there has been a significant Jewish meditation tradition for thousands of years, coming from that time of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the rabbis who instituted the daily prayer, and really how our prayers were really some sort of meditative device, and how he goes through the Bible and talks about the different stories in the Bible and how they were all through meditation, and the prophets were all able to receive their prophecies because of their unbelievable skill as meditators. So really, we have an extremely rich tradition, which through the course of our history has sort of been watered down. And what I'm trying to do in my own way is just to reclaim what we've always had. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Interesting. Would you say then, Dr. Epstein, that...
Benji's good.
If given put into a proper meditative state, a person could achieve prophecy?
I believe so. I mean, I'm not going to be that one to do it, but the Piazesner Rebbe, the Hashem Yikom Damo, the Kolonimus Kama Shapiro, who was killed Kiddush Hashem in the Holocaust, and Rav Kook, spent a lot of time with their writings believing that Nevuah is something that is possible. The Piazesner Rebbe Mavo Sharav speaks about this very specifically, where we think Nevuah is prophecy, is some sort of fortune-telling device, but really it's just tapping into what does Hashem, what does our heart creator want from us right now in this moment? Even the Talmud discusses that there were, I think, the number of Nevi'im at a certain time in the temple period was Kiflaim Kiyotze Mitzrayim, double the number of people who left Egypt, which is around 1.2 million people were Nevi'im. And that doesn't mean that they were all spouting certain, you know, prophecies, but they were able to be really connected to what the divine will was at that very moment.
That's awesome. I never actually thought about it that way. Okay, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1978 came up with a whole plea that people should organize meditation.
Yeah.
At that time, transcendental meditation was becoming popular. When I was in secular high school in 1974, there was something called the TM Club. First, it was actually a TM class. And then there was like a whole hue and outcry. No, you cannot have a TM class in the school. Then there was
cool, high school.
There was a, yeah, it was very on the edge. And then there was, it was like a TM club. And then by the time, the year after I graduated, they got rid of the TM club also because it was like the people were saying it's religion in school and et cetera, et cetera. But it was very popular to the point where you had teenagers were doing it back in the year in the early mid-70s. And then 1978, Lubavitcher Rebbe said, please, somebody formulate something where they don't need to necessarily transcend out of themselves, but they should formulate, do it in a Jewish way. So what's different? Where's the focus in Jewish meditation then, Benji?
The focus is on God. Meaning, I think I'm not an expert in comparative religions, but I don't think Buddhism requires any sort of beliefs. I mean, maybe they do, and I'm just not familiar with them. I think that that's one of the they're more accessible because they don't require you have any sort of dogmatic traditions or beliefs. Where in Judaism, the whole point of meditation is to be davuk to Hashem, is to attach ourselves to our Creator, and that's also getting more, you know, talk about getting closer to God, but getting closer to God is being more similar to God. And our prayers to be ascending means for us to be more inwardly gazing and getting in touch with our essence, with our neshama. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe is definitely somebody who, as much as I can't say that I'm versed in the Sichos at all, but as a personal role model, as the Nasi Ador, it's hard to fathom that an individual like that was so tapped into everything, and he recognized that there's a real strong need for it. But, I mean, specifically the school of Chabad is very much into a contemplative tradition and spending hours and hours of his bonus and to just really contemplate these things and these not just physical things, spiritual things, and to do it in an in-depth way and in a methodological way, which is, it's hard for the uninitiated, but there's certainly a gateway to do that. And Tanya is a wonderful start. Breslin is a wonderful start. But they're all trying to connect with different types of people to connect with something that's much higher. The Mishnah in Brachos talks about the Hasidim Rishonim, the original pious men, who would spend an hour in preparation, then an hour in prayer, then an hour afterwards. What were they doing?
Go ahead, tell us.
Yeah, I'm saying, drum roll, please. They were meditating. They were meditating, and then they were able to enter into that state of either bittul, coming from whatever tradition you're coming from, of that nullification. But that nullification isn't that nothingness that I think Buddhism preaches, that nothingness of where you're only subsumed by the all, by the everything, by the mali ko'ami, that which fills all worlds, and the misovir ko'ami, that which surrounds all worlds. And it sounds ethereal and it sounds flighty because it has to be experiential. But I think we need to get back to more of these training techniques, specifically in this time, for people to see Judaism as vibrant, because Judaism is a living religion, just like our God is a living religion, is a living God, Kel Chai. And I think the Lubavitch Rebbe was alluding to that people are going to be looking for more spirituality and sustenance in this area, and says, let's do it.
Okay, this is fascinating. Okay, so the book has a subtitle where the word mindfulness is inserted. Mindfulness has become a buzzword for the last dozen years or so, maybe a little longer, that people are now doing these mindfulness things. Could you explain to the people here what's this idea of being mindful?
Well, what turned me on to mindfulness was I was in graduate school and trying to get through graduate school in psychology, and these new modalities of treatment from more Eastern philosophical traditions were sort of entering into the treatment modality, and they're fascinating. To be more present, to be more aware, to be less judgmental, and we only have the present moment. It sounds trite and it sounds cutesy and it sounds like it's a fortune teller, fortune cookie type of thing. But the truth is if you're not in the present moment, then where are you really? And Buddhism has really done a fantastic job of really making this into a rigorous practice. And most spiritual traditions have some form of being more present in the moment, because that is really where you can be fully awake and fully woke. You know, the expression these days, like, oh, he's woke. No, to be woke is to be living fully in the present moment. What does Judaism have to say about that is pretty much everything, whether it's the Nefesh HaChaim or the Baal HaTanya. The Olam, what does the pasuk say? Lon devarcha nitzav b'shamayim. That Hashem's word is constantly supporting the earth. He talks about the Nishar Yichud Be'amun in the first book of Tanya, where he talks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's constant influence, is perpetually recreating the world. And that's one of our fundamental, that's our beliefs, one of our beliefs. And if God was to kaviyachol, if he was to just, exit the building, now, if he was to remove his influence, then everything would revert back to absolute nothingness. So when God is bringing his constant, moment-by-moment shefa influence into the world, that's our only way of connecting to him. So we can connect to God. The only way to connect to God, which is one of our commandments, to cleave to God, is to connect to what's happening in this very moment. And that is mindfulness, is to connect to it without any judgment, without any preconceived notions, without wanting it to be any different than it already is. And it's a big avoda, because our brains is a big, it's a challenge, because our brains have been sort of conditioned to be focused on the future and to worry about the future and to ruminate about the past. But once we're able to get past that, then we can really be connecting to the divinity that's imbuing this present moment with its kedusha, with its holiness.
This is amazing. Anyway, our guest today is Dr. Benjamin Epstein, has written a book called Living in the Presence, A Jewish Mindfulness Guide for Everyday Life. We are talking about Jewish meditation. I'll tell a cute story. Actually, the story has the cute ending. So there used to be in Morristown, the yeshiva, Labaush yeshiva in Morristown, there was a brilliant Rosh Yeshiva by the name of Eli Melech Tzwiebel, who passed away just a couple of years ago. And he had been the Rosh Yeshiva for 50 years, without exaggeration. And every time I'd go to New York and expecting to see him, I'd always make sure I had formulated some kind of question to talk to him that I shouldn't like sound like an idiot when I'd say, hello, how are you? And so one time I came up with this question based on really a geeky law in diktuk in Jewish and in Hebrew grammar, which is based on the Vav HaHipuch, you know, combining grammar deals with meditative deals. And there's the way it works in biblical Hebrew. It works. It's not used in Israeli Hebrew. But if you want to say, and he went, what you would say in Hebrew is, and he will go. And if you wanted to say, and he will go, you'd say, and he went. And then the vav would switch it from past to present, past to future, or future to past. So I asked him, is there any way possible that a person could possibly tap into the quote unquote vav that's doing that? And he just looked at me and smiled and said, no, because you're always in the present. You can't get to the past or the future. Sorry. Well, so this is that kind of what you're saying? Is that that
yeah,
the idea is to train
exactly
oneself?
That.
I'm here. Okay.
You're here. He named me. That's it. The Makom Asher Nimsa is Admas Kodesh. Remove your shoes from the feet. You know, because right here, right now, and it's really something that's ineffable. Just like talking about God is, you know, the Ein Sof. There's no really way. The present moment is also something that the Maharal speaks about. This when I saw this Maharal, and I don't see that much Maharal, but I just came across it. I fell out of my chair because the Maharal says l'kol zman ve'et l'kol chefetz. To everything there's a time, and every single thing. He quotes on a Midrash that a time for Adam to go into Gan Eden and to leave Gan Eden, and for Noach to build the table, leave the table, leaving the whole question about free will aside. And then it says ve'et l'kol chefetz, and a time for every season, which is a famous song. So that's, I mean, people might be familiar with it. You know, do everything turn. But the Eit L'chol Chefetz is referring to a specific thing. And that Eit L'chol Chefetz is the giving of the Torah. And the Eit ties into the Ata, the Hebrew word for the present, the right now. And saying that the Torah is given constantly. You can attach to the giving of the Torah constantly. It wasn't something that happened 2,000 years ago. Because again, everything that's happening on some level is God's will, which is Torah. And so if we're able to tap into the present and... It's really challenging. But when we've had those moments where we're just feeling in sync, and it doesn't mean necessarily things are going well. We could be radically accepting a difficult experience in our lives, saying this too. Right now it's like this. And saying, on some level of faith, also saying this is the way it's supposed to be. And that doesn't mean that a person should stay in an abusive relationship, Rahman al-Assad, a person that's struggling with alcohol or drug addiction, to say, okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. But saying very clearly that right now I'm here right now, and I can still do what it is I need to be doing without saying I give up or saying it's too much. Saying right now, focusing on the here and now. And we see tzaddikim, we see the people. You know, if you ever had, I never had the privilege of having yechidus with someone like the Rebbe. But, you know, to be in the presence of someone like that. I just went to 770 this summer just to go into the office for the first time. I've been to the office for the first second stage, just feeling it. Just to be with that person, you feel like there's nothing else in the world. And the man had the weight of the world on his shoulders. But when you're in the presence of somebody who's fully realized, fully actualized, fully davuk to what's happening in the here and now, you can't help but feel like everything is the way it's supposed to be.
Indeed. Do you... we have some minutes over here, a little bit of time. Do you have like an exercise that we could do right now for somebody who's, say, a worrier? Because there are those people. Just a short exercise, something that people could walk away as they're listening to this, that they can say, "Yeah, I'm gonna do this."
It's a little bit al regal achas, you know, teach me the Torah on one leg. But it's because all of these things are easier said than done because it's intuitive. It's intuitive, but because our minds resist it, it's really hard. But one thing I would say about worrying, like a cognitive technique would be to just give yourself 15 minutes of time to worry about it. You know, say, oh, I already worried about it. I already spent my 15 minutes. You know, I put it tied up neatly in a box. Some people have a mental worry box, tie it up, put it back under your bed. But for this type of meditation, it would be thinking about a situation that you're worrying about and really seeing it as clearly as you possibly can. And finding yourself in a quiet room, giving yourself a few deep breaths, and then actively bringing that situation to mind that you're worrying about and seeing where you feel it in your body. And then what I do with my clients is we direct a stream of no to those feelings, no to those worries. And because what we're doing is they're already here. So what we're doing is we're sort of adding insult to injury by adding to the difficulty, because the worry is objectively psychological suffering. But we say no to it because we say we can't have these feelings. These feelings shouldn't be here. And so we'll say no to that. We'll no to that physical experience and no to that, you know, whatever you're worrying about. Because worry by definition is something that's anticipatory. It's always in the future, because if you're worried about it right now, then that's fear and you're afraid of it. It's happening right now. You're worried about something that's always happening later on. Even if it's going to be in the near future, it's still happening in the future. And you're saying no to it, and you're going to experience those, how it feels to say no to those situations. And then you're going to pause for a few minutes and then recalibrate and then bring that situation to mind again. And you're going to cultivate an attitude of yes. Yes to the worry. Just saying yes to it. Saying Cain or Amen or I accept. I think it's Ramendel Limanover says, Vayas Cain Aaron. Aaron was constantly saying yes. Vayas Cain Aaron. Cain. So by cultivating an attitude of yes, that doesn't mean we're condoning it if someone did something wrong to us, but we're allowing it to be there. We're creating the space for it to see it clearly as it is, as just worry. Just as it is, and not the mitzvah, not the reality of the situation. And then we could deal with it more effectively. And I don't know if that made a lot of sense because it was a little bit rushed, but that's something that, to say yes to the worry, is something that I would do if you want to do a 15-minute guided meditation now. I'm a little bit under the weather, but...
15 minutes we don't have for the segment, but...
Maybe for next time. Maybe I'll come to Detroit. How are the Tigers doing? I forgot to check.
No, don't even. That. Don't even go there.
Okay, some witty banter about the Tigers, but I guess
they're so bad we don't even worry about them.
Okay.
So can't you get
kosher food in the Detroit in the Tiger Stadium? I remember seeing that.
Only on special nights. It's not like Shea Stadium or at Baltimore's Camden Yards, no, or at Dodger Stadiums. No,
kosher brachos, all to bring us into the present moment. To make sure we're not doing things mindlessly.
There we go.
Make a bracha. Make a blessing. You pause. You make a bracha afterwards to experience that gratitude. Judaism is giving us mitzvot to connect us to the present moment, because the present moment is divinity. Okay. That's how Hashem is revealing himself right now. Ein od milvado, the way it is right now.
That's really cool. Okay, you spent a pretty interesting summer. You were in Camp Hask, which is a very special place. I get a lot of envelopes thrown at me during the course of the year, and Camp Hask is actually one of them that I don't throw away. It's for special needs children and adults. Were you implementing this type of therapy at the camp, and how did it go?
I've tried different things. It's extremely intense environment, and the staff is working 24/6 to get a day off. And not Shabbos. They get a day off. Shabbos is just Shabbos. Everyone works on Shabbos here. Because they're essentially parenting these unbelievable special needs individuals who are so filled with life and with their unique challenges. And it's a real incubator for Jewish leadership. It's something that we're really, really, really blown away with every summer. But I give a weekly sicha where... we talk about these ideas. And because the book came out this summer, one of the campers got a hold of my book and started chanting in the diner and buy Benji's book, which became a mantra. So there's that awareness. So when I meet individually with the staff members, we're definitely talking about these sort of things, of how to be more present, be more accepting. I think you can't help but leave this place a better, more thoughtful, compassionate individual. Because you are doing something, you're not doing chesed. It's a misnomer that people think they come here for the summer to do chesed, to do engage in loving kindness. What they're doing is mesiras nefesh. They're literally sacrificing their summer for someone else. And you can't help but become a better, more just accepting and empathetic and compassionate individual. And all of these things go hand in hand with that acceptance of the present moment, of being present in the here and now. And looking at your campers and seeing not their difficulties, not their challenges, but seeing them as a more organic whole, of seeing them as a neshama. And then you could see yourself as a neshama. We talk about cultivating the good of ourselves to see the good in others. And that's also a real component of mindful Judaism and mindfulness in general, of that loving kindness. You know, what the Buddhists will call metta, we'll just call v'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
And it starts with yourself. And it's a real hard. It's funny because the Rishonim all talk about how it's so difficult to love the other like you love yourself, because that self-love is so intuitive. But in this day and age, it's become a lot harder to love oneself. And really, people are able to focus more easily on saying the positive about someone else. But when they're looking inward, they have a lot more difficulty doing that. And that's one of the things that we really work with on the staff here, is believing in the good in themselves and believing the good in everyone, and in the Jewish people as a whole.
That is so beautiful. That is really wonderful. Our time has run up, and I could talk for another. I could fill the whole show up with this one, but the producer saying
this is my bread and butter, because I believe in it, and it's happening. I'm not going to be the one that's going to start this revolution, but I think someone's going to read my book and really just read the way we do davening, the way we learn Torah, the way we talk to one another. With this mindset, which I think the Torah and we have is really coming from the tzaddikim of our generation, and the way to do this is to become a tzaddik, the amet kulam tzaddikim, is to believe in your goodness, to believe, and just like the Lubavitcher Rebbe tasked all of us to do. And I believe that there's going to be more changes for the positive, and I hope the book is going to be litoralist for a benefit for as many people as possible.
Okay. Benjamin Epstein, Dr. Benjamin Epstein, Benji, we want to thank you so much for coming out. Again, the book is called Living in the Presence, a Jewish Mindfulness Guide for Everyday Life, and it's available. It's from Urim Publications and available wherever you buy your Jewish books from. I want to thank you very much, and keep us apprised of future endeavors, please.
If I'm ever in Detroit, I'm coming by.
For sure. Okay, that's going to do it. Sure. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. It's from Yiddish Gems, which came out 12, 15 years ago already. We've dug down deep to find a Yom Kippur Yiddish song, and this is called The Captain's Yom Kippur.
Die Sonne ist vergangen, a rop in a flam, hoif chwal jest die Strahl zu gossen. Es folgt a gepanzerte Schiff auf den Jamm mit russische Kriegsmatrossen. Der Schiffskapitän steht beim Spitz auf dem Deck und halt a Lornette a kleine. Und plötzlich der seht a herrlichen Breg und auf ihm a Stott gar a Schöne. Oh, des heißt die Stott, ihre Lumpen beim Port glanzen wie Diamonds von Weiten. Und plötzlich der hört er anigen von dort, von alten vergessenen Zeiten. Es der Mann, in der Nigen sich reuen, ist eine Sache von Joden mit viel Vergnügen. Nicht Beethoven, Mozart, nicht Wagner, nicht Bach, sie seppes aneinander mit Nigen. Es zieht ihm der Nigen Stott da rein dort, er kann sich kein Ort nicht gefinnen. Er bindt ob a Schiffel und fort zu zum Port und läuft auf den Breg wie uns sinnen. Er läuft in die Gassen, na rein und na raus, der Nigen wird starker und klärer. Und was mehr erhört es, sein Herz geht dem Mäus, die Bänkschaft wird starker und schwerer. Es zieht ihm der Nigen a Reus von der Stadt bei finstere Heuche Fabriken. Und in a kleinen Kergessel es hat sich heut gehört, hätten der Nigen. Und plötzlich der Setter es geht bei a Wand an altitsch gefreue Gebeugen. A kleinen Päckele und hätten Hand a Tichel a Riebe die Eugen. Mutter, sagt er an Igen ich her und ich kann mir kein Ort nicht gefinnen. Es zieht mir die Herz und es bägt sich a Hell. Ich fiel, als ich Rirsach von Sinnen. sagt ihm die Alte, dein Ponym sagt uns, dass du bist der Jid und der Ribbe. Ist bei dir Heim, dass die Becke nicht groß, weil Heim ist die Nacht von Jom Kippur. Die Nacht von Jom Kippur gibt er ein Geschrei. Ich seh meine kindische Juden. Und das ist der Nigen doch von Kohol Nidrei. Es lebt bei mir als in Sekunden. A Danks auf die Alte, der was hat dir geschickt. Punkt in der Zeit, helft der Tommy. Man hat bei uns alle bald viel Eis verschickt. Nicht doch, wer soll zugehen?
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Feynman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. I'm going to put on my classical music voice now, as we have up next for your listening. This is Ernst Bloch, Avodas Yom Kippur. The violin soloist is Eliyahu Shulman.
Approaching, why go anywhere else for your holiday shopping when you can go to the Grove?
Fully renovated, the Grove is located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696. At the Grove, you'll find the largest selection of kosher foods and wines in Michigan. Looking for fresh, round holiday challahs, honey cake, or exotic fruit for the new year? The Grove has it. The Grove has the freshest produce, gourmet dairy, deli, and meats. They even have a kosher bakery and hot takeout right on the premises. It's The Grove on Greenfield Road and 696 for all your shopping needs. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Yeah, need something? I'm going to run over, actually, after I get done with the show and go get some stuff that I need for Yom Kippur. Up next, for your listening pleasure, this is Yishai Lapidot. The song is called Adon HaSlichos, Master of Forgiveness.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. This coming Wednesday night
is Kol Nidre, the beginning of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur extends all the way to Thursday night with Ne'ilah, the closing ceremony. It is a 25-hour fast. It is the Day of Atonement. On it, Jews are forbidden from eating and drinking, bathing, putting on lotions and creams for pleasure, perfume, that kind of stuff, brushing one's teeth, rinsing one's mouth out with mouthwash, wearing leather shoes, and engaging in marital relations. And the idea is, it says in the Bible that we have to afflict ourselves, and these are called afflictions, the fact that we refrain from doing these things. The idea is that when we come before the Almighty on Yom Kippur, we don't need to be burdened by, oh, I got to go eat. So it's a very interesting thing. This last week in synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, so the services started a little bit late. And the cantor, the chazan, kind of took his time a little bit going through certain sections of it. And we wound up ending, I would say, probably close to half an hour later than was normally expected. And people complained. Oh, it's, because they hadn't eaten. And I was like, I was thinking to myself, what are you complaining about? Next week, you're not going to eat until 8:30. It's because that's when the sun goes down. That's when it gets dark. But it's not that, because is it the expectation? Here on Rosh Hashanah, it's a yontif. You're supposed to have a big meal. As far as, supposed to be a celebratory meal once you get done with hearing the shofar and whatnot, because we know the Almighty is going to give us a good year. On Yom Kippur, we are released from all physical limitations, you might say. You don't need to eat. You don't need to walk around. How you smell, that's, no big deal. Nobody cares. Okay, because our focus is on dedicating ourselves to the Almighty. That's the bottom line of Yom Kippur. It says the day before Yom Kippur, which would be Wednesday, it's a mitzvah to eat, you might say. In fact, the way it's phrased in the Torah is that you have to afflict yourself for 2 days. Now, how do you afflict yourself for 2 days? It's not that you fast for 2 days, because it says you should fast from like the one day, which is the 10th of the month, the Thursday. How do you afflict yourself on Wednesday, up until Wednesday evening, is by eating, such that by the time Yom Kippur comes around, a person should be stuffed to the point where, I ate too much. I can't believe I ate the whole thing, to quote a moniker. Because the Almighty wants us to feel a sense of purpose. And first of all, getting into the world, that would be Wednesday. And on Wednesday, it says that we're supposed to feel sorry for all the things that we've done for the year, previous year. And we do on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. People do kaparis, they take a chicken or some money. They perform this ceremony of asking for God to atone for us. And then on Yom Kippur itself, it's a resolve for what's going to be in the future. Because the word teshuvah, to come back to God, is broken into two parts. I feel sorry what I did till now, and I resolve I'm not going to do it ever again. I'll be better in the future. And it's the second part really is more important than the first part. The first part's important, because you can't say I'll do better in the future if you're still thinking about what you did in the past and how good it was. No, you got to say, I'm really sorry I did that. It's also a very interesting thing is that Yom Kippur is between man and God. It's only those things that a person did which would be something which would be, say, oh, I'm not hurting anybody, it's just between me and God. Yeah, that's what Yom Kippur is for. The day before Yom Kippur is, did I do something to somebody? Let me try and make amends for that. And that's what the day before Yom Kippur is. So in all, we're guaranteed, you might say, that we're written inscribed in the book of life for a happy and a healthy new year. And that's what our goal is, to get to the following year, 5783. But not just to get to it, but to live with it, to go through it, to make it a year better than last year. That's where our resolve should be. We're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Herschel Finner, you're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, R-A-B-B-I-F-I-N-M-A-N. You'll be able to contact me. This is drop me a line, whatever is on your mind, that's fine. Also at Rabbi Finman, you'll find archived editions of the show. You'll find other ways in which we present Judaism in an entertaining and educational form. We also have classes over there. It's all very good stuff. We don't cut it short. It's also very important is the donations page. Yes. The Jewish Hour is part of a 501(c)(3) corporation, which does many things serving the greater Detroit area and the world at large via the internet at cyberspace. And we're only able to do it with listeners like you stepping up and supporting. Before Yom Kippur, it's a good idea to give extra charity, show the Almighty you mean it. Go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page, donate today. Story involves Reb Shalom of Belz, the first Belz Reb. And one day, this happens absolutely before Rosh Hashanah, is when the story took place, 150 years ago or so. The night of Slichos, which is Saturday night at midnight, people wake up and they go to prayers and they ask for God's forgiveness before Rosh Hashanah. So he, instead of going to the synagogue, got into a carriage with his wagon driver, and off they sped into the forest, and they stopped at a shack. And he looked in the shack, and he saw a Jew, one of his disciples, sitting there with two glasses of vodka. And he saw that he was talking, but he couldn't hear what he was saying. And after a while, he picked up a glass of one of the Chaim cups, the shot glasses, knocked it back, waited a half a second, knocked back the other one. And then he continued talking again. And he did this, repeated itself two more times, so he had altogether six shots of vodka. And then he got up and he started dancing. With that, the Belzer Rebbe said, "Let's go." And he went back and started, the people were waiting already, the prayers were late. After prayers were over, he turned to his wagon driver, his secretary's Mashores, and said, "The gentleman who we saw in the shack came in late for the prayers, which means he'll be done late. When he's done, bring him to my office." And that's what happened, and a half hour later or so, he found himself standing in front of the Rebbe, which was kind of like getting called in front of the principal. And he said, "Tell me, what were you doing before Slichos with those two shot glasses?" And this man was just like, "How does the Rebbe know?" He said, "I knew something was up, and I got in my wagon. Instead of going to Slichos, I went and I saw in your window how you took the three glasses of vodka, and you took them two times, both of those six glasses, and you got up and danced. What happened?" So he said, "Rebbe, it's like this. A while ago, you know, my wife died, and it left me very, very upset. This was last year, and I've been alone and grieving ever since. And then all I had was my animals. My cow suddenly got sick. And I said, 'Listen, Almighty, you took my wife already. What more do you want from me? Why are you going to take my cow?'" He says, "But the cow got sicker." And I said, "If you don't get my cow better, I'm never walking into the synagogue ever again." And the cow died. And lo and behold, I stopped going. And then my goat got sick. And I said, if it is that my goat doesn't get better, I am not going to put on tefillin anymore. Goat died. And then the chickens died. And so that's it. I'm done. I'm done with Judaism. God doesn't care about me. Then I suddenly realized that tonight's slichos is a special prayer. So I remember one time that me and Shmuel the butcher, we had a fight. We didn't talk to each other for a month. And then after a while, Shmuel came over, he brought a bottle of vodka, and we poured each other a l'chaim, and he said, enough what happened in the past, we are going to be friends from now on. And so, and then we had three l'chaims, and we danced, and now we're good buddies. So I figured, listen, I really need to go to slichos. But I made a promise, I'm not walking into the synagogue ever again. But I sat the Almighty down, and I said to him, listen, we had a problem, whatever, I'll forget about what you did, you forget about what I did, let's drink on it. I drank, I saw the Almighty doesn't drink, so I drank his too, and then after three times, I got up and I danced. So this, the Belzer Rebbe said, there was a decree in heaven. And the decree wasn't working. People were davening, but it was like they're just reading words out of a book. You with your actions, you brought about that the decree should be rescinded because you talked to God like a friend. That's going to do it. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week, an easy and meaningful Yom Kippur. We hope to see you back again next year. Take care.